Okay, my name is Bert, or Bertram E. Samples. We're on the corner of Live Oak and Oldman. We're listening to some blues songs by Enchanted Traveler driving by. And we're about to embark on a very short journey. I'm here with Carrie Snyder, the principal progenitor of this audio tour. Okay, all right, so we're walking down Holman, and I must confess, I normally ride by here, but first thing I remember just walking by here is this church here. We've talked before about the connections with this church as being one of a historical landmark, one of the oldest churches in the city. Trinity Methodist with the great stained glass windows done by a very famous artist from Dallas, Texas, a contemporary of Dr. John Biggers. The church was run by a pastor that went to a very famous college in Marshall, Texas, and it was a very famous film that was directed by Denzel Washington called The Great Debaters, that chronicled the famous debates that this small debate team from Wiley College had with the famous debate team from Harvard, and they beat them. And what to me was enchanting about that movie was not so much that historical fact, but the music that started off the, hey, how you doing? Happy New Year. All right. Okay. The music was very mesmerizing at the end, and I always wanted to get that soundtrack to that. But the musicians that did the soundtrack, they are known as the Chocolate Drops. And they are a group of talented young musicians, musicologists that have studied some of the old rural music from the Appalachians all the way through the South. And they can play several genres of types of music. But it's very fascinating to hear that music because it has an intimate connection between, well, we try to classify music in terms of, is it blues, rock, is it jazz, is it soul, you know. But here, when you hear these kind of early forms of music from these rural villages, towns, you can see the connection between country music, from blues, from African music. It all comes together.
Yeah.
Because it's not been marketed. It's there for pure entertainment. Now we're walking by one of the oldest hospitals, and the only hospital at the time that was the Third Ward. And I do remember my grandmother serving on the board here. I never came to this hospital with her or seen her attend the meetings, but I know she did some service, volunteer service at this hospital. And then across the street from here, that building there was a famous building, eat place called El Nido's. And it was one of the few places I remember, even after my father had got ill and he was in this halfway convalescent house a few blocks going towards Sophomore and Ennis. On the Christmas holidays, I took him over here because he had some friends that used to run a barbershop down here. And as soon as I brought him over, I had no worries that he was going to be taken care of. You know, I was more concerned of him living in that house than I was when he was,
yeah.
You know, because yeah, these are people that he had known for many years, and they're just like him. They came from small towns, Texas, and they still had that connection of living in Houston, but they had their roots is from the country. Well, it's a shame all these buildings are boarded up. You should be thriving businesses here. I used to come down to this building. This used to be a barbershop here. Mrs. McBride. I used to get my hair cut right here.
You were saying that your mom was a barbershop inspector?
My grandmother.
Your grandmother.
Was a beauty salon.
A beauty salon.
She was also a beautician, and she had a license as a beautician. And I believe this building here used to be run by the Colemans. Dr. Coleman had his practice here. It was painted green originally, dark green. And his daughter, Kathy, got to meet her because she's has done, from time to time, she's done some art dealing and ran some gallery spaces. Looking at some puppies as we walk by. And down, we're getting close to this barbershop. This is one of the barbershops that was one of my last spaces that my dad used to hang out at. It gave him a great sense of comfort in the last part of his years. I feel very remorse that I didn't get involved with him that much at the time that he was visiting this shop. But it was a shop that only opened only basically two or three days a week. A woman that ran this named Joyce, and she had a very loyal clientele of people that would show up. It was some people that hung out there that when they were little boys or young men, that my father trained them how to teach them how to swim at the YMCA. So this is where we're heading, and this is one of the connections to going this route. And this great two-story building in front of us. I don't think she owned the building. She just leased out the downstairs space. So I remember one time we were celebrating my dad's birthday down there, and both me and Rick went down there. And it's one of the few times that I think my father had met Rick and Rick had met my father. That was great. I mean, he was among his friends, and he was one of those very unusual, unexpected entertainers.
Uh-huh.
You know, put some music on, he'd start dancing, and he had this very unique way of dancing. At the time, I wasn't able to really appreciate it.
Uh-huh. Were you embarrassed?
A little bit. You know how your parents are, you know?
Yeah.
You don't see your parents as, you know, in that capacity,
no.
You know?
Yeah.
But this is the building here.
Uh-huh.
And this was a shop. And him and Joyce were one of some of the best friends he's ever had.
That your father ever had?
Yeah. And they were sometimes, you know, cut people's hair all night long.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes they would go on trips together too.
Uh huh.
But I remember the times when he was hanging out here. His sight was declining, so he relied heavily on his hearing.
Uh-huh.
And he could come to that door and just tell by the tone of their voice, who they were, what were their intent, before he would open that door.
Yeah.
And he was very, very astute in doing that.
Happy New Year!
Hey, Happy New Year!
All right.
All right.
Hey.
Hey.
Hi.
Hey.
Happy New Year.
Hey. Happy New Year.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing. People.
So
that,
even if he didn't know them, he could tell from their voice?
Oh, he would know a lot of people.
Okay.
That was the thing about my father. He knew a lot of people either directly or indirectly.
Uh-huh. Like he knew who they were.
Because he had been in some room and he remembered people's voices and said, I've heard that voice before.
Oh, yeah.
And then he'll say, do you know so-and-so?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I'm so-and-so, and you are so-and-so, and you're so-and-so is related to so-and-so. And then you know, all this conception about we're only separated 6 degrees.
Yeah.
Now it's like 4.5 or
yeah.
something now. Well, sometimes it seemed with my father was only 2.5.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, he was extremely gifted at being relating to people on a human level.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he had gotten a degree in psychology and he was very astute to read people's character and nature very adeptly. And someone didn't really mess around with you, but, you know, he enjoyed the activities where people would like to socialize. And so
how did he start teaching these boys how to swim?
Well, this is in his early days when he was just finishing up his degree at Texas University, and he had to separate because he was enlisted in the service for a while to go and fight in Korea, and then he had to come back to finish up his degree. But there is my remembrance of it is when he was, I was probably 7 or 8 years old, something like that.
Uh-huh.
And I used to go and hang out with him at the Y, and I was learning how to swim too. And so I got to see, you know, kids that were like in high school and college level, and so I got to see kids to relate on a different level. Oh, that's all right.
What's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Hey. What's up, brother?
Hey.
What's up, man?
Oh, well, all right.
Yeah, man, that's me. Hey, you know.
Yeah. How you doing?
All right.
That's good.
Okay, speaking.
How y'all doing?
All right, how y'all doing?
All right, y'all doing?
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Hey, y'all about speaking.
Y'all have a good one.
Same to y'all. Let's see, we should cross here. We're heading south. We're on Tier Western. We're going down Tier Western. So we turn left off of Holman. This is an area here, just walking here. It makes me think of some spots that could have been a beauty salon in Third Ward. Here are some other spots, or in Fifth Ward.
It's all blurred.
Yeah, it's really blurred because, you know, the landscape has changed. I mean, look at all the abandoned plots now that are no longer there. And some things have just been completely mowed down. Like this section here in front of us, we're looking at a parking lot and space that's made for the students and visitors of TSU on the northeast side of their campus. And I actually remember before all this was wrecked, there was little shops. And as a matter of fact, there was a wash interior that was ran by a family named the Johnsons, who used to live across the street from us in Sunnyside. I never really knew them that well, just some people that you see as they came out of their house and they got in their car,
uh-huh.
Going into the house. They were very private, but it always looked very strange to see someone that lives, you know, someone very moderately well in their house in the car to drive, and then you see the business that he was running was a wash interior, and it was really run down. It was not much investment in keeping it up, anything.
Yeah.
but maybe I saw it at the point of its complete decline, and it was something that that he wasn't going to invest in it anymore.
He didn't know the land was being bought.
Right. Now we're walking by CUNY Homes, one of the first early public housing that has been refurbished in Houston. I remember one of my aunts used to live in a housing project like this in Fifth Ward before they moved into to one of their homes. And they were just a few blocks from where one of my grandmothers used to live. CUNY Homes, TSU, and that's Jack Gates on the other side, which both my nephew and nieces grew up, went to school at.
December 31st, and everyone has their Christmas decorations out. It's like 70 degrees.
70 degrees right now.
We're walking.
That feels nice to me.
Yeah, it does feel nice.
Yeah. And everybody's getting ready for their New Year's fellow celebration. So everyone's in a celebrate mood, which I find kind of amazing. You know, I guess I mentioned it, but I don't know if I finished my thought there. People that have the littlest seem to appreciate what they have more. You know. So, just my narrow perspective on things at the moment. So, what we'll do, we'll come to this corner here, then we'll turn left. In the corner, Cleveland. Yeah, this has been this road has been cut off recently. President TSU, I guess, got special ability to cut off the street, so he has his campus being uninterrupted. And it shows how the neighbors being enclosed where I live around this area here, even more so. TSU, campus of Texas University, and we're within a block of coming to,
So you went to TSU, right?
I went to TSU.
And you have a mural there?
I have a mural there.
At least one that I know about.
That's the only one I have on campus.
That's the only one.
So
why did they close off the street?
No, well, that could be the overt reasons for doing it, but I just think the president wants to create a more, I guess, traditional look of a campus look, because that street was open up until, 7 or 8 months ago, and it has been like that for decades. But since they've added, 3 more buildings, I guess I feel it's more safer for students to travel crossing streets. But on the southeast side of campus, they have a series of dormitories, and so it's a lot of street crossing too, without any kind of restrictions that this street has here. Okay. We're approaching Cleveland and Sampson, and we're almost at our destiny, finally. We're definitely going to take a different route back.
Yeah.
We'll probably just go through TSU campus and talk about things. And this is what is left of the YMCA, right there.
So right.
Yeah.
Seeing
a bulldozer, one of those, I'll call those kind of raptors that devour concrete. But as of 2 weeks ago, there used to be an elaborate campus for recreational centers and lodging for young men who were attending Texas Southern University. The YMCA, the original YMCA that was probably built in the 50s or early 60s. And it was a place my father worked as a swimming instructor. And I will go there as a little boy. Had friends because of my father that were in college. And it was a real strange because I had memorized this, one of the early songs for Coca-Cola. And I used to sing this song, Coca-Cola, and used to crack them up. And they always coaxed me to try to sing it.
How did it go?
I can't think about Coca-Cola, things together with Coca-Cola. And it would crack them up because I would put a lot of soul into it, you know. I had a certain rhythm to it at the time. Because I was uninhibited, you know, about the time I was doing it. But over here was a gym. Mm-hmm. And that's where they played basketball, and it was a trampoline. There was a weight room there, and then in the mid area, they had a swimming pool. Uh-huh. And that's where I first learned to swim, and almost drowned a few times, in this area. Then it was a small little open campus area here, then it was an open area on this side, and then the dormitory was up front. And that's where I learned many years later that my father knew Kermit Oliver and his brother, because they were students at TSU, and they were some of my first heroes as artists. And I never knew that they knew my father, or my father knew them. I think his brother's name was Charles Oliver. But it goes back to what I've been saying all along, is that there was a certain intimacy by, if you lived in a third world area and you hung around long enough, you got to know someone that knew someone that knew someone. And there was always a bond and connection. And then just like up and down Cleveland, I was telling you about, there was all these small businesses. They had businesses up and down here too. And it's a woman by the name of Mrs. Martin, who's a precinct captain for voting at my precinct on the corner of Southmore and Tierwester. It's the Lockhart Elementary, which I think Professor Fox talked about was originally a synagogue. Maybe did someone else mention that? It was originally a synagogue, but then once, you know, the deed restriction of preventing, you know, black people from moving south of Alabama, like a number of places in Houston, then it forced people to move from their home because they were threatened by the value of their property changing and all these superficial notions of what racism had characterized, you know, what would happen in a city because of integration. So on one hand, by creating opportunities for black people to live in better homes and neighborhoods, it was also destroying some small businesses. My father always used to remind me of that there's always a price to pay when integration is taking place, because then people move out of the neighborhood or they don't do their business in the neighborhood anymore. And they go further and further and further out. The church that we just passed by, the first church we passed by, Trinity, I would suspect most of their congregation doesn't even live in the neighborhood anymore. And they would come in on the weekends. And it's an aging congregation too. So they're concerned about how they keep, you know, young people coming back to the neighborhood. And matter of fact, this morning I had an experience. From time to time, you get someone comes to your door on Saturday morning, and it's usually a church group, and they're usually Jehovah's Witness. And so I read them immediately, and I said, yes, who is it? And, excuse me, sir, do you have a time tomorrow? I said, well, I'm kind of busy right now. And then the young man said, yeah, but is your name Bert? I said, yes. Did you used to have a pear tree in your backyard? I said, yeah. Well, I was one of your neighbors and used to give us pears. And I said, oh, I remember that. It was probably my grandfather. It wasn't me. So that happened this morning.
Yeah.
He knew the house. He knew who was there. Knew the pear tree and all that. You know. So it's a price to pay when you see something like this happens, you know. What would they build on top of this land that has all these history and this memory, you know? I mean, it's just illest faces of what I remember. It used to be a kind of a soda bar that was on that other end of the building that kids used to hang out at and get those famous shakes and malts and hamburgers and stuff that you always idolize as a teenager having, you know? You know, and it was right there in that corner there. And you can't find a place like that in the neighborhood anymore.
Yeah.
With all our advancements and everything. I mean, it's probably just end up becoming a parking lot, just like over there. Because we're dependent on our cars so much. It's just like many things, you don't appreciate the things at the time that they were happening. As a kid, you're always thinking of the future of what things will become, and you can't wait to be a grown-up so you can have opportunity to do things, but then you realize you're losing a lot of freedom that you have as a child, you know, because of the things that your parents and your grandparents have provided for you. And so when I spent my Christmas with my nephew and his family and their relatives, then I could see in my great-nephew's niece's eyes, you know, all the possibilities. And I hope they're there for it. The other time that makes me think of this area, but it's usually in the at the beginning of the fall, is you can hear the marching bands warming up. And that's always been a tradition and a sound of fall in this neighborhood, because not just the TSU marching band, but Jack Yates' drum set to a drum corps and horns. They always start practicing, and you know it's fall season, it's football season, and it's a change of season. So you know you survived the sweltering heat of the summer, and you're looking forward to some relief of autumn breezes whenever they might come, which is very rare these days. So there's another change of time that you don't have the same types of seasons we used to have. At least. Not recently. Well, I guess we can start heading back. We can just go this way.